Good morning, dear brothers, sisters. It's such a wonderful day. This is a wonderful day. We are in Pittsburgh. Today is May 11 in the year 2013. And we are in our annual spring retreat. Pittsburgh and Montreal are the two sanghas I'm working with, and that are hosting two retreats every year. And so thank you, Montreal, thank you, Pittsburgh. And the other Sangha online, I'm today, have also been so helpful, diligent in hosting a regular retreats in the region area. I have been, I like the word tour, and when I use the word tour, I can imagine myself being on one of those flowery bus, and I don't know when Sister Terry will allow us to use her flowery bus to be touring the States, but that would be so cool. So for now, I'm flying. And we have been, well, after my trip to Vietnam, I was back in Montreal at the Institute of Applied Mindfulness, Mindful Practice Center. And now, after that, I went to Texas. And we had a wonderful week with the Plum Blossom Sangha. My sister Terry there is a Dharma teacher, and she has become very active since her ordination. We had the chance to visit the Sangha in Dallas, Awakening Heart. She also brought me to jail. No, it was a wonderful experience. And we shared this wonderful practice. Well, Sister Terry has been working in that jail for a long time now. And it was the first time that I had the chance to go in there to do some work with her. And it was so moving, so touching. And when we were reciting Sitigarbha, I can really see that bodhisattvas are everywhere. It's not only in Buddhist temple, but they are everywhere, and they can be manifesting in all forms. And I think that it opened my eyes in how it is that we can extend our arms, or how is it that we can be the arms of the Bodhisattva Avalokita and be at place of true suffering and where suffering is. And to be there, to be able to see how wonderful Bodhisattvas can work and can manifest in those places that we do not have the chance maybe to be exposed to or to be in touch with. So I'm very thankful for Sister Terry for having allowed me to open up a little bit more of my eyesight. After, okay, another good news from Texas. During the retreat, I had the chance to meet with two newly born Sangha, a Sangha from Fort Worth that has been in operation for more than a year now. And there's another one that is starting in San Antonio. And our friend from Houston also came, as they usually do. Texas is a very good working ground for my sister Terry. After Texas, I went to Omaha. And in Omaha, I was not entertained, hosted by the holy local Sangha, and this is a Sangha that is an offshoot from the Kansas City Heartland Community of Mindful Living. And the Holy Locust Sangha has been founded, created by my brother Mike McMahon, and it started some years ago in Holy Spirit Church, in the basement of a church that usually cater to homeless people. So they are feeding homeless people on a night, well, every night. And they just moved to a new location, the Yoga Path. I was there for the third retreat that was organized in Omaha. And I love that place because it is the Columban Fathers Retreat Center. And when we go there, we can see deer roaming on the ground. And when I was there and seeing the deer on the far side, I said, wow, this is the true deer park, not the deer park in Escondido, but this is the true deer park. And when I was in Omaha, so I had a chance to also speak at the Countryside Community Church, and there were more than 100 people attending. That was wonderful. I also spoke at the Yoga Path, and we also had a wonderful retreat with that also concluded with a beautiful mindfulness training transmission, as we did. And now I'm in Pittsburgh. And yes, that joke, I don't know when it will leave me. But it was raining in Pittsburgh, but we had one beautiful day, a sunny day. And I think it was the only day it was sunny. So it was raining here also most of the time. So if next week it will be raining in Miami and Key West, then, okay, I will take it, but I hope that it will stay now. So we are in Pittsburgh, and this is the third day of our three-day retreat. It is a non-residential, and we have found that this formula is very favorable for people who could not attend to our regular weekend retreat. So to offer opportunity for retreats during the weekday seems to have been a good opening, or a good door opening for friends who could not attend to the weekend event. And the theme of this retreat is living peace, nurturing peace in ourselves. That was the first day. The second day yesterday was nurturing peace in our relationships. And today is living peace, nurturing peace in our world. It is also our e-talk day, and it is so wonderful to be able to do an e-talk with a live audience. Very different from the one that I did from Vietnam at 12 in the morning, no, at midnight in my hotel room. So thank you, Pittsburgh, for having me here. And so when I'm in Pittsburgh, there's also a wonderful activity that I so love, and it was the third time that we did it this year. I was with my brother Tony offering teaching. Yeah, but I don't know, what did we do? I don't know. Me and my brother Tony, a workshop. So we offered a mindfulness training workshop for healthcare professionals at the Gateway Rehab Center. And if there's a CEU training, and it gave 6 CEUs to, I don't remember which profession, I think that it was social workers, but a host of, a list of abbreviation that I couldn't understand. So this is good work. And on this third day of the retreat, Nurturing Peace in Our World, this is also the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, the 9th e-talk of this series of 10 on the Diamond Sutra. And please allow me to explain this to our friends who are here and to friends who are everywhere now listening in. Every year we try to have a common theme, a common base, or a common curriculum of study for all the Sangha, so that we can together study and learn. In this type of learning, I find that the more we are together, the more people we are together, the more Sangha we are together, and the easier it is to understand and to understand and to practice the training. When I'm with in Pittsburgh, and I'm doing it with Laughing River Sangha, I'm bringing what we have done in Omaha and in Texas before I came here. And when I go to Texas, when I am in Omaha, because we've been learning the same thing, because we've been following the same program, it is easier for me to be in sync and to connect. And it is also beneficial for me also to be able to read, to hear, and to listen to the local, to each local insights. Because when we are studying together in a Sangha, when we are meeting together in our weekly event, and we are contemplating, looking into one teaching, and the understanding of that teaching will grow. And when it is growing, we share it to our community when we sit together. And one friend, or one insight, or one idea that is expressed and shared become a collective idea and insight. And that collective idea insight is not an individual insight anymore, but it becomes a collective Sangha insight. And that same thing, that same seed that has been sprouting out in any of us is continuing the work of growth, but not only in one person, but in 20, 30, 50 person. And that is why that seed of awakening, that seed that we are cultivating, studying together, is for me so much more beneficial and efficient than it can be if it was éparpillé, it was spread out. So this is the 10th talk, and next month in June, the broadcast will be from Denver, and it will be the last one of the series, and we will resume in September. And in September, the program of the 10 months that will follow the month of September is a program that will be done jointly by Dhamma teachers Lily in Montreal with Brother Tony from Pittsburgh and Sister Terry from Texas. So the three Dhamma teachers will work together in order to come up with a program for us next year. So that will be wonderful. I'm looking forward to just another good year. So in September, when we started, we looked into the seven factors of awakening. And in October, we came back to that first, to the first teaching of the Buddha, to get us back to the basic teaching and to the original intent of the, and the most important teaching of the Buddha, the Four Noble Truths. And when I'm speaking of the Four Noble Truths, we did it again, and many friends may say, oh no, not again, we know it. Okay, good, if you know it, wonderful, but let us redo it. And I cannot but not remember what the Buddha said when he was entering the para-nirvana, his para-nirvana. He mentioned, I have not taught anything in 45 years but the Four Noble Truth, and that is the only teaching. So everything else that we are doing are only means or skillful means or ways in order for us to be able to better practice the Four Noble Truth. And studying Buddhism, we always need to come back to that very place. Why is it that we are practicing? And so when I'm traveling around, I always ask friends to do a post, to a pre-retreat contemplation. And in my early days of teaching, I started teaching in 1994. I always say, please help me to get me to know you better so that I can address my teachings in a more relevant and appropriate way. And that was very helpful. Because when I'm speaking to you, I would like to know who I'm speaking to. So that pre-retreat questionnaire was very important for me, so that I can. But through the years, I have come to learn and to know more about each of you. And I have also found that what I'm reading has been repetition over repetition of who I am myself. And so it has been helping me to come back to myself and to look more better at myself from what I'm reading and learning from the retreat participants. But now I look at that formality in a different way. And I look at it as a contemplation, as a meditation that we all need to do, not only for Chan Hui when he comes in to teach from somewhere, but that it be our meditation every day, or every week, or every often, as we can give it to ourselves. But it is, so to be mindful, and this is about mindfulness, is to be mindful of who we are, of what we are doing, and why we are doing it. Mindfulness is always mindfulness of something. And I think that we can deserve to be the object of our attention. And so when we are practicing to do the questionnaire, or the checking in to ourselves, we are practicing mindfulness meditation, mindful breath. And so those two sutra that I just mentioned are the tools that we have in order to be able to practice mindfulness. And we practice mindfulness of the body, of feelings, mental formation and mind, in order to be able to realize the Four Noble Truth. We have also in our practice, we know that this practice is not easy when alone, and that we need to have the protection, that we need to have the support, that we need to have a refuge. And that is why we have looked at the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, the three jewels and the three refuges that we need to support us, to help us in our practice. And we looked at the three Dharma seals. We looked into the three doors of liberation. We studied We looked at in February we studied about desire. In March, Sister Terry, you have a talk to us on why we meditate. Last month, we studied the six parameters, and this month, today's theme is about right understanding. Right understanding. What is right understanding and what is wrong understanding? I would not dare to say right or wrong. And in fact, I think that right understanding is not a good translation of today's theme, because it was in French. And the French version is the danger of the dangers, les dangers de la mécompréhension des enseignements, the teachings of the Buddha. The Dharma is deep and lovely. It is very profound and subtle, and it has the capacity to free us from all our afflictions. But because it is profound, it can be misinterpreted, it can be misunderstood. And when we study Buddhism, if we are not skillful, if we are not intelligent, then those are the words that come from the sutra. We need to be skillful and intelligent in order to be able to study the teachings of the Buddha. And the intent of this, or the theme of this talk today, is to ring that bell of mindfulness to ourselves, to this group of study, to our group of study, to our friends in the practice, to the e-talks participant, attendant, listeners. Because we have been through so many wonderful concepts and notions. And notions and concepts that may have been of help to us, that may have brought us some understanding and some freedom, some more happiness, some more joy. And it is my wish. But I could not ring that bell of mindfulness. And this bell of mindfulness today, you just be careful. Be careful. And yesterday, we asked ourselves, are you sure? And so, listening, reading, studying Buddhism, we need to, I am always asking myself, are you sure? And in my tour this time, I have had the chance to share with my friends about some insights that I have had during my trip in Vietnam in March. And when we, I had the chance to spend a day of mindfulness in our root temple, or our teacher's root temple in Tử Hiếu, we had a day of mindfulness there with all the monastics, and we were a group of 20 friends from America. Going back and walking in that land, looking at the wash basin of our teacher, has revealed in me many new understanding of the teaching that I did not know, or that I thought that I know. And what it taught me was that, and I was so happy to learn that, or to be reminded of that, is that our understanding of today is our today's understanding. And if we continue our practice, if we continue to look at our work of looking, it can but only get clearer. And yesterday or the day before in Pittsburgh, I repeated often the word nurturing. And there is also the same word that has been used in the theme of the retreat in Omaha. And in Omaha, they use the word, we use the word nourishing. So nourishing and nurturing is to recognize, is to keep that awareness of impermanence alive. Impermanence in the beautiful sense of the cultivation. So yesterday night and this morning, I had my breakfast conversation with my brother Tony, and I mentioned to him, you know, I look at the work that we have been doing up to now, and I look at what our teacher has been doing, and it is the same type of thinking that we have been doing in the Dhamma Teacher Sangha Catechism Council. We ask ourselves, what is it that we are doing? And the work cultivation seems to describe what we are doing. So cultivation in ourselves. When we study the function of the mind, and we have been taught that we contain it all. When we sing or read the beautiful poem that our teacher has been teaching us, Call Me By My True Names. And when we know, or when we remember, when we are taught that we contain it all, and that we contain all seeds, including the seed of understanding, including the seed of peace, or the peace, the seed of happiness. And our practice, when we look at it that way, is about cultivation. And when we practice cultivation, we are practicing true diligence. We are practicing the four diligence. We are practicing watering and nurturing the good seed that we have inside of us. And in the same way we are practicing those good seeds, we also water and cultivate our understanding. And in the same way, when I say our peace today, our joy today, is built on the joy that we had yesterday. And if we continue the practice of the joy that we had yesterday, and we continue the cultivation, then the joy today can only be a little bit greater than the joy that we had yesterday. And the joy that we have today is the base from which the joy of tomorrow will be made. And the joy that we have today will only be greater tomorrow. And in the same way, our understanding can grow and will grow if we also practice cultivation. So right understanding, how right is it right? How right it can be as right as we can get it to be, as much as we can. And it is always so wonderful to be traveling and to sit and listen. And that has been, for me, the best food that I have received from all the Sangha I'm working with. Everywhere I go, I've been learning. Everywhere I go, I have received new lights on my understanding. And every time I have the chance to be in a retreat or to lead a retreat, my understanding has been growing. I have often repeat it, and it is the same repetition here again. But as soon as you think that you have understood, ask yourself, are you sure? And if you ever answer, I'm sure, all I will be able to say is good luck. That is one thing that one of the insights that I have received during my trip. But all of a sudden I saw that, and I repeated it this morning again in the wonderful transmission ceremony that we had. But this morning we had 7 new ordinees, 7 ladies. Yeah, and I had to be very mindful, but and still I forgot and did the mistake 2 times. But I was reading the ceremony and I said, dear brothers and sisters, look at that. Oh, no brothers, sorry. Okay, dear sisters. So dear sisters, thank you. And then I say, ordination teachers, Cheng Hui True Radiance and Brother True Sender of Peace, on behalf of Zen Master Tung Quang Kit Nhung Han, 42nd generation of the Lam Te Dayana School. Do you know Master Lin Chi? If you don't, I will advise you to read about him. And our teacher has taught intensively on Lin Chi. But when I was working in the temples in Vietnam, all of a sudden Master Lin Chi became alive in me. And I could see how sometimes when my friends say, Chen Hui is so ugly, Chen Hui is stupid, I cannot say it's not me, it's because of him. And I'm so happy when I found out that he was so alive in me. And one of the things that became so alive in me is his way of teaching. And he's not teaching in the flowery, kind, nice way that we see our teacher do. And if we think that is our teacher, then we need to ask ourselves that question. Are you sure? So that smiley, gentle monk is also Lin Chi. And my friend who are in the monastic community have told me how sharp and how he can use also the stick. And he's a master at using that also. And the stick and the shout are not stick and shout, but they are just look at you. And that is how transmission is being done. And that is how teaching is being done in this tradition. So talking about Lin Chi this morning and talking about the Lin Chi becoming alive in me make me realize how many teachings my teacher has given me and that I didn't catch at the time. But they come under the form of koan. And they were in me as seeds, and I'm so happy that now all of a sudden they came up, and I said, wow, that was the teaching. And that is why when I have been back, I've mentioned to my friends, and I say, if you have had the chance to meet that teacher in person, if he has told you anything, remember the moment, remember the interaction, and remember the teaching. Because Thai is continuously teaching. It is not only in his Dhamma talk. And when he's in front of you and he's speaking to you, do not think that that's a casual conversation. It is a teaching. And the teaching is given in the same way that Master Lin Chi was doing, in the form of koan. Everything that my teachers say or do are teachings, and they are Lin Chi's teaching, and they are koans. An example of a casual teaching that can be of a casual conversation that can be taken as a teaching or not. Good luck. And in one Dhamma talk, Thai explained that, and he said, you know, I was walking and I saw that retreatant working in the kitchen cutting carrots. And so I asked him, what are you doing, my child? And that with written answer, I'm cutting carrot, and Thai just smile. And what are you doing? It's not a question. What are you doing is a teaching, and it is a koan. What has it taught you? What has it given you? Remember it, because that's a lifetime teaching. He doesn't need to have the answer. I'm cutting carrot. He said, well, I can see that you are cutting carrot. I'm not blind. But then when he saw that the student is not there at all, he would continue with another one, and he said, this is the last chance that I'm giving him or her. Be careful. What are you doing? Be careful. And this is about right understanding. So in my meditation now, what I'm trying to do is to call up all of those teachings and to try to better understand them. And when we are talking about right understanding, I'm very careful, I'm very wary. I do not think that my understanding will ever be right. I can see a little bit clearer every day if I do the practice. But to say I understand, no. I won't dare to say that. Or if I do ever think that, I will remember to ask myself, are you sure? And that is why this morning, when in the transmission ceremony of the 5 mindfulness trainings, I was reading, recite them often, at least once a month, so that your understanding can grow deeper every day. If you think that you have understood the 5 mindfulness trainings, then you can remember that. Go on. Good luck and come back. Cultivation. Everyday work. Diligent work. And when I use the word diligent, I always quote my brother Bill in Boise. And he say, for me, I understand diligence in a very simple way. It is a moderate, continuous effort. And I like the word moderate. And I know that it has to be continuous. But now I will add another element to that. And that is the joy. So moderate, joyful effort. I forgot the word continuous. I hope that, I don't know how in the other sangha you are, but in this sangha it is so silent that it is scary. And I have to check to see, well, they're still sitting, so they are not falling off their chair, which means that they are not asleep. So I would venture to say that they are in deep thinking. And I'm very happy because I think that that's what it takes. I am, as always, not addressing to friends around me, but to myself. And when I'm speaking like this, it is to share with you what I am trying to do myself. And it is such a wonderful opportunity. It is such a joy. And it is so nice to be able to have sanghas with whom we can practice and with whom we can grow together. I'm looking at the clock and I have 8 minutes left before the hour. So maybe another point to make my point. The teachings of the Buddha has been delivered 2600 years ago. He spoke in some funny language. And his teachings was heard, practiced, and realized by a very intelligent, skillful, accomplished, awakened people. They didn't have any audio recording or video recording, but they remembered it all. And they repeated it. So one monk would be repeating to 10 monks, to 20 months, to 100 months, depending on their power and depending on their understanding. And not very long after the Buddha passing away, there were hundreds of schools of Buddhism. And each of the schools took a part of the teaching and tried to do it. And thanks to the flowering of all those schools, of those hundreds of schools, spreading and cultivating the teachings of the Buddha. So thanks to that happening, we can now have the means or the not the means but the chance to receive a very wide and diverse transmission of the teaching. And so when we study or when we hear or when we read a teaching, there are many chances that that teaching has been distorted in the transmission. And the distortion can be good or not good. We are not that, we cannot judge, or I cannot judge. What we are receiving now has gone through oral transmission, has gone through interpretation, has gone through all of that. And so when we hear and we listen to teaching nowadays, we need to be careful. So I come back to my first message. Because in the readout, in the send-out, handout that our sister Lily has sent to us, and that brother Antonio has sent with the invitation to this e-talk, sister Lily sent us two handouts. And one of the handout is Thundering Silence, the Better Way to Catch a Snake. And it tells about the story of a monk in the time of the Buddha who did not understand the teaching of the Buddha. He was speaking the same language. He was listening, hearing it directly from the Buddha. But he did not understand it. And the name of the monk is Monk Arita. And he say that the Buddha is encouraging to induce, to engage into sensual pleasures. And that sensual pleasures are not an obstacle to the practice. And he was there, listening to the Buddha directly, and that's what he taught. And so that is why the Buddha came up with a sutra that is called The Better Way to Catch a Snake. And if you happen to cross the road with a venomous snake, or any snake, I'm scared of the snakes, but anyway. And in my sister Terry's ranch, there's still some. And they come and they visit her, where the chicken laying eggs, yeah, and they share the eggs with her. Not nice. Be careful, because if you do not know how to catch the snake will bite you and you will die. And the Buddha compared his teaching to a snake. And that is why in my introduction I say, be very careful, be prudent. Ask yourself, are you sure? And that is why the Buddha also advised that we need to approach his teaching skillfully and with intelligence. And because I do not trust my own skillfulness and my own intelligence, I come to my teacher. And now because my teacher is so much in demand and so inaccessible for me, I come back to my Sangha. And when we are together in a Sangha and we engage in Dhamma discussion, it is we have a better chance to get a better understanding of the teaching and of the practice. So to conclude this, there's no right understanding. It is only understanding ripening and getting deeper every day. And it is my wish that I still be with you so that we can do this work together for a very long time to come. In my plan, I wanted to speak with you about self and non-self and all of that, but I think that we can all do that in our respective Dhamma discussion group today. But you can look into the notion of self and non-self. And because we are studying the Diamond Sutra, is a way also to help us understand and to help us transcend our own suffering by removing notions, the notions that we carry with us from the time we are born. And that is also at the root of much of our suffering. And in the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha advised us to remove four notions, and it's the notion of self, the notion of human being, the notion of living beings, and the notion of lifespan. So I will invite you to discuss about those notions, to discuss about the Diamond Sutra, and to discuss or to measure your understanding of those notions. If you remember, I have also shared with you about how to measure our understanding. And I think that one good way to measure our understanding of the Buddhist teachings is to measure our own level of happiness. How peaceful am I? How happy am I? And that answer will be the answer to the question, how did I understand the teaching? Yesterday we spoke about nurturing peace in our relationship. And of course I took that example of the glass of water and the salt. So we all heard about that. So that is another measurement of our understanding. It is also a measurement of our love. And love and understanding inter-are. Love, according to the Buddhist this teaching, comes from understanding. And the more understanding and the greater the love. And if there is love, it is all-encompassing and it embraces it all. And if love is so great, there's no place for suffering. So many ways to measure our understanding. But the best way, the surest way, is our peace. So thank you very much for being here. And thank you for a wonderful day.